And good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our telephone talk program. My name is David Inch. And this morning, I guarantee in this first hour, we're going to have a good time because our guest is the man that we'd like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. He stops by here on the program, generally speaking, if we're on our regular schedule, on the first Wednesday of the month at 10 o'clock. And we talk about cooking. And we have done many different sorts of shows. We've talked about cooking from different regions of this country and different places around the world and different sorts of dishes. And we exchange cooking stories and tips and recipes and always have a good time. And this morning, what we're going to do is talk about tomatoes, because we're really coming into the time when you can get good ones, whether you go to the farmer's market or maybe you grow them yourself. And they're certainly vastly superior to what we get most of the time. And you start thinking about all the great things that you can do with tomatoes. And so we're interested in tomato recipes. You can give us a call and share that with us, and I'm sure he will do the same. Before we get going here, we'd like to remind you that Focus 580 is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, homemade pies by Inge, gourmet foods, cards, and gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, and Alley Cat Wines, all housed in the same building in downtown Monticello. The Brown Bag Deli encourages you to support programming on AM 580. Welcome back.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
We're really pleased to have you here. Well, this tomato thing, you know, now We're fortunate enough now so that we can get a wide variety of good produce all the time. There's virtually no seasons anymore.
Yeah.
Almost. But here now there's this one item that's still, you know, now we can get pretty good tomatoes. Pretty good tomatoes most of the time. It's, you know, it's an acceptable tomato, but it's just
the nice ones from Holland have been the real treat. You know, the one that comes five or six on a little stem.
It has the stem still.
It has the stem in it.
Yeah.
And it smells good and they taste good and they're fairly good in odd times, but still, the rest of them are plastic.
Yep.
They are indeed plastic. Well, I thought about I know we've talked about tomatoes before, but I try to keep it down to at least once a year. And somebody said to me just last week, well, we're about 1 week from the onslaught of the neighbors' tomatoes. And I thought, well, okay, this was a little farther south here down in Madison, Indiana. And I thought, well, that is exactly what's happening. It's that time of the year again when that good taste comes around. And then you just cannot be avant-garde. I'm sorry. I cannot be ahead. Didn't the two hot tamales blow the whole thing about tomatoes two nights ago?
Oh, I didn't see them.
Two nights ago, she gave the whole history, as she knew it, of tomatoes and everything. And I thought, well, there it goes anyway. But are you aware of the fact that tomatoes were not eaten in this country until middle 19th century?
Yes, because
and I'm trying to figure out who was the first person to finally eat one.
I know that I don't remember. I have certainly heard the famous story that there was one individual who championed the tomato and that people believed that they were
Thomas
poison.
Jefferson.
Was it Jefferson? I thought it was.
Well, she said Thomas Jefferson brought tomatoes and planted them in his garden. He was one of the early, yes, that's at Monticello,
really?
Because he was quite an experimental gardener.
Yes.
And but you see, that would have been fairly early. That would have been late 18th. Wonder was he early 19th?
No, that would have been the 17.
Yeah,
late, hundreds.
Very, very late 18th century, early 19th century, and he was one of the first persons. I think he brought them from France or something like that, mm-hmm. because he was bringing a lot of interesting things. I had never heard that until Mary Sue,
America's sweetheart,
announced that, and then also a lot of the people thought that they were poisonous because they're related to the deadly nightshade family. Mm-hmm. Their flowers look exactly alike. And a friend of mine remarked that her father, which is certainly of this century, said they ain't worth anything except feeding to the pigs, and that she always wondered, well, the pigs didn't die. Why don't we eat them? And so that condition went up for a long time. They were also at one time thought to be an aphrodisiac. They were called love apples. That was another part of their mystery. I don't believe Mary Sue said that. So tomatoes, you keep thinking, gosh, how could Italy have survived without tomatoes? It was the Spanish that started cooking with them that introduced them then into Italy. As she announced, which I had not heard of before. I did not know that it would have started in Spain. Although, you see, tomatoes would have gotten back to Europe by Portugal and the Portuguese certainly not – and they are a New World fruit.
That's what I had thought, that they are.
So you see, that means that they couldn't have used them before Columbus, certainly. Mm-hmm. And it was probably the Portuguese, the ones who spread peppers all over the country, also spread tomatoes one way or the other. So all of these wonderful tomato dishes that we know, rather than just eating a tomato, are not as old as we would probably want to think they are. So what's your newest tomato? I do have a new one that I don't know if I invented it or if I just did it. I know I just did it. It just seemed like a good thing to me because some new things have come together. Now that we can buy portobello mushrooms, and there was a time that I thought portobello was where you bought antiques in London. But come to find out, they're these delicious mushrooms. I snap off the stem, and I found another product of recent, within the last 6 months, of dried tomatoes and garlic paste. It comes in a jar. I found it at Schnucks out near the produce, and I think I may have seen it someplace else. It's the dried tomatoes and garlic mixture that comes in a tall, skinny jar. I smear that on the gill side of the portobello mushroom, and then put a big fat tomato slice on the other side and broil all of that. Ooh. You don't want a whole lot more. And if you really had to do something to it, you could put herbe de Provence and a few breadcrumbs on top, which would soak up some of that. But no cheese or anything else. Those two. And what a nice taste that was. And so that's the latest thing that I've done with a tomato.
We have somebody that we could talk to.
Great.
On the campus.
Great.
Why don't we do that on our lineup? I'm number one. Actually, I didn't give the phone numbers at the beginning, I guess maybe I think probably people know the numbers. But anyway, if you'd like to call in, you have a recipe to share, a question, a cooking story, something tomato-related, 333-9455 for Champaign-Urbana and toll-free 800-222-9455. That's any place you can hear us. And we have someone on the campus here on line number one. Hello.
Hello. Well, mm-hmm. I thought I'd just contribute a bit of information. Some of those dishes are perhaps older than Doyle might think, because before the introduction of tomato, Europeans and Asians were using fruit in place of the tomato.
Oh.
Really, plums.
Oh. Now, that's an interesting thought, because I'll tell you what. On the way out of my kitchen this morning, I grabbed a plum. Because it was going to kind of be my breakfast. I'd had a lighter breakfast before. And I thought, I wonder why you couldn't do something with it. It crossed my mind that some of the things that we're doing with one kind of fruit could be done with another. That's interesting. So then a lot of the sauces and things would simply be translated, wouldn't they?
I think that happened. The Iranians still use some plums in some dishes that are very delicious. And also things like pomegranate.
And pomegranates sauces. Made into sauces or use them to bind things, yes.
And they're quite delicious and quite distinctive.
And then, of course, the use of the preserved dried fruit of apricots and dates and things like that were made into sauces and mixtures of such sorts. That's a very good thought because it would be very easy then to just sort of, let's put this into here and have that. I was thinking about fruit salsas. That was what was in my mind. I was thinking that, gee, that would be a good thing to do, and just like the tomato, because everyone's doing different kinds of salsas this term. Well, that's very funny because that crossed my mind this morning. Thank you for reminding me. That's very good.
I have another substitute I might suggest.
Yes.
I think very often it's possible to include some of the Mexican husk tomato in recipes that call for
The tomatilla.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They have a really nice lemony flavor.
They're readily available now. They weren't available for a long time, but they're quite readily available even in this town. You can find them several places. And that is related to the ground cherry.
I think it's very closely related.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So although it's called a little tomato or something like that.
Or green tomato, sometimes people call it that.
They call it green tomatoes, yeah.
It's really not a tomato.
And it's used for a green sauce. But those would have been available too. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Well, I'm enjoying your program.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. Well, thanks a lot. Well, stick around.
Sure will. Bye.
Other questions, comments, and the recipes also welcome if you'd like to give us a call. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455.
Now, other than just eating salads and such things, there's so many ways. What I was hoping is that there would be some different things that people would do, so because I'm anticipating that, oh no, here's another tomato, you know, that's coming. And I thought maybe if you had some different ideas that you would not just dread looking at the last tomato. The first one you'll thrill at, and then you'll get tired of it and you want something else. I have a recipe that I have used an awful lot for a long time. A friend of mine, a colleague of mine, his wife, did this recipe for me a long time ago. It's a vinaigrette, but the vinaigrette is a little bit peculiar because I use about 2 or 3 tablespoons of tarragon. So you make a vinaigrette, you know, which is one part vinegar and a little bit of mustard. Grey Poupon is fine, and a little bit of salt, and then 4 parts of olive oil, and a little bit of garlic. And if you do put garlic in, you want to put just a tiny touch of sugar in it, and about 3 tablespoons of tarragon, and then chop up an entire green onion, stems and all. So you've got this slurry that you've mixed up. And then sort of layer the tomatoes, slice them, and then put about a tablespoon of this stuff on it, and another layer and another layer and another layer, so that they sort of sit and marinate, you know, as a packet. And then pour whatever you've got left over around it. And, gosh, it's a totally different thing because it has marinated a little bit. It's not one of those things you do real early. It can be done, you know, very near dinner time. But what a different taste to come out with all these things on top of it, and the onions have mellowed and everything else. And I understood that she had learned that in Spain. Hmm. And so that was kind of a little Spanish technique of dealing with tomato. They're sliced. They look kind of nice, these, because you're always seeing them maybe not layered, but, well, laid out flat on a plate, you know, a little salt and pepper put on them, something like that. But then these are in little stacks, and so they're kind of neat. I always wanted to sort of take the whole stack myself, and you'd have a whole tomato. Pretty good stuff. That's one way that I enjoy eating a fresh tomato. Another one, I learned this in where? Alexandria, Virginia, all places. I was there for a conference, and I went to a little Italian restaurant, and gosh, it was good. And this was a slice of tomato, a slice of mozzarella cheese, and a basil leaf.
And fresh mozzarella.
Fresh mozzarella, yes. Fresh mozzarella and a basil leaf, and strewn with good olive oil. And that was it. Nothing else. No other taste. All of those fresh tastes were just extraordinary. And each one just excited the next. Mm-hmm. I guess probably I was more excited over the fresh basil leaf and the mozzarella and sort of, hello, Mr. Tomato, nice to see you there kind of thing, you know.
Well, I think it makes a – fresh mozzarella is kind of bland. I mean, it doesn't really have a strong flavor, but all of those flavors together, I think really do something. Just like how I think if you take the sort of sweetness that comes from a good tomato paired with the acid edge, if you have some vinegar, and then if you have something salty like feta cheese or an olive or something, those three things when they all get together, that's really good.
Well,
too.
Why? The Greeks couldn't have been wrong, could they? A little tomato, a little olive, and a little feta cheese. And, let's see. I remember another story. Let's see, that last one. Gosh, that was 1979. So it's been a while. They had fresh mozzarella in Virginia long before we got it here.
Oh, well, they're on the coast. You know. they're more happening.
Something that amused me was that I do like the Greek village salad, hortiki, I think it is, the village salad, which is chopped tomatoes and chopped cucumbers, and they're kind of done in the Chinese roll, you know. So there's all these facets, and they aren't just sliced, but they're chunks of tomatoes, and then olives are on the side, and feta cheese is put on that. But then the dressing is so interesting because one of my friends said, "Well, it's olive oil, a little olive oil, and vinegar." Okay, it's a little olive oil and vinegar. But I would make it; it wouldn't taste right. I'd make it, and it wouldn't taste right. And one day, I remembered that my mother had watered down the vinegar considerably when she put it on some cucumbers and things like that. So I did half water and half vinegar, and the olive oil. Well, it was perfect. He said, What did you do? What did you do? Well, I did this and that. Really? So he went home to his mother and said, "Mother, did you ever put water in the vinegar?" "Of course." The answer was, "Well, it's vinegar and oil." "No, well, the real answer was it's water and vinegar and oil. And so if the vinegar is too harsh for you, just put water in it.
Then it will tone it down.
And it tones it down, and it makes something that you drink by the spoonful." I do anyway. I use bread and sop up the bottom of that. Ooh, is that good? All that
stuff. That's also another one of those famous examples that somebody has made something forever, and you've had it, and you you ask them how to make it, and they just say, "Well, here you go." And so, for some reason, they leave out some very important piece of information, so that now, I don't know if that's subconsciously they really don't want to part with the secret, or they themselves have sort of take for granted that
that's just the way you do it. That's all you have to remember in your mind is some vinegar and some olive oil. Then the technique you have to sort of reinvent each time that you're making it. That salad, I mean, what I just mentioned was with those fresh vegetables and then sopping up with bread. You see, the next step of that was to take bread and put it into the salad, that Tuscan salad, which is almost an entire meal for, I think it was invented to take out to the, or to carry with you if you're going out to work in the field or something like that. And that is where you chunk up the bread, and you may even soak it in water and then squeeze the water out so that it'll absorb the juices even faster. And so all of those juices, the vinaigrette and the tomato juice and all that stuff, and it kind of sits and waits until noontime to come, and you eat that as quite a feast. That's a really good taste. It's a peasant dish that I think became a very fashionable dish, as a lot of peasant dishes do. You know, the royalty takes, "This is too good for the peasants. We should have it." And I believe it became a very famous Tuscany dish.
How do the simple folk live?
Exactly.
Right. We have a caller here. Doyle Moore is with us this morning, the man we like to call our chef in residence. And we're talking a little bit about tomatoes because we're really coming into just getting into the peak tomato time. Mm. And as he says, initially it's going to be fabulous, and then the point will come when you say, "Oh no, not another tomato. I don't want to look at it." And maybe there are some unusual recipes or something that's a little bit different, so that when you get to that point that maybe you think you can't stand to look at another tomato, this would say, "Oh well, yeah, maybe so. We'll try something a little bit different." So recipes, questions, comments, whatever are welcome. 333-WILL, toll-free 800-222-WILL. Here's a caller in Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi, I have a sort of tomato recipe.
Yes.
Well, first of all, I have to say that I saw a recipe in the New York Times. The Sunday Times have these wonderful recipes, and it had a picture of an acorn squash with a lot of seafood stuffed in it.
Seafood, uh-huh.
Yeah, so I took it out, and then, of course, I lost it. So I had guests over a little while ago, and I sort of made up something based on that. But instead of using an acorn squash, which didn't seem like it would hold a proper enough portion, I got a spaghetti squash.
Oh, yeah.
Cuts nicely into two halves.
Uh-huh.
And then what I did is I got some mako shark and shrimp and marinated it for about 4 hours in a marinade that you can get at the Great American Seafood Company. Mm-hmm. I think it's called Taste of Kyoto. It has a hint of tomato, which is one of the reasons why I'm calling. A hint of tomato, uh-huh. And ginger and soy sauce.
And soy sauce.
Yes. And I suspect there's a little garlic in there, too.
A little bit of garlic, if not, and then onions, maybe some little green onions, yes.
And that marinated about 4 hours. And then I cooked that, and on the side also...
How did you cook it?
Oh, I used a grill. I cut it up into very small pieces, but I used a very fine mesh grill on top of a regular grill.
Okay,
A little metal grill. And then... Then what I did, and I'm not being very exact with things, but that's because I'm inspired by a cookbook called the Blue Strawberry Cookbook, in which there are all these recipes that are totally interchangeable, and the author says, just do whatever you want. You know, if you don't have this, then do that. And so I always cook that way. And then I had asparagus tips and red pepper strips, and I braised them with that sun-dried tomato garlic spread that you mentioned.
Oh, yes. Isn't that a good taste?
Wonderful. Yeah, and you can get it at Jewel as well as Schnucks.
I thought it's back there in the corner at Jewel, yes.
Yeah, and so then I cooked that separately, then mixed the two together, the fish and the vegetables, and then put them in the scooped-out spaghetti squash, which at that point were very, very tender.
Had you baked the squash?
Yeah, baked the squash about an hour and a half.
Oh, okay,
so it was very,
yes.
very tender. And spaghetti squash is wonderful because it comes off in these long little strips.
Yes.
And so as people were eating, they were sort of taking parts of the wall off, and it was as if they were eating pasta along with
good. I was going to ask if you hollowed them out or not.
Yeah, absolutely hollowed them out. Everybody got a half. Each person got a half.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Filled up to the top with all that vegetables and fish.
That sounds awful. Asparagus tips and red peppers and...
With that glaze.
And shrimp and shark.
Yeah. Well, it could be any meaty fish, I would think.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That had been marinated for a while.
That sounds... And then what else did you have with it? This is getting good.
Well, it was a pretty big main dish. So we just had some couscous on the side, some Italian flatbread, and a simple green salad.
That sounds awfully good. Well, thank you very much. That's,
okay.
That's quite nifty. Ooh, that sounds really good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It sounds like it was a great feast.
I'm sort of excited about that one. That's very nice. Good.
Another Urbana caller. Line one. Hello.
Yes. There's a local dish, which is bay scallops on fettuccine with a cream sauce.
Oh.
Now, if you don't want cream sauce, you wind up with rather slippery bay scallops on rather slippery fettuccine.
Yes.
And it's not all that easy to eat. So I'm wondering whether, I thought, well, it would be interesting to put the scallops on sticky rice instead. And then I was thinking of a sauce, and I was trying to think of something rather interesting, so I want to try this out on you. It's just the two basic ingredients, avocado and ginger.
Avocado and ginger on bay scallops.
Right. Do you think it's too heavy? What would you do with it?
Well, now, of course, what comes to my mind right again, of course, America's sweetheart did this because she did a very quick fettuccine and scallops, and the scallops were simply they were quickly grilled and then tossed with a tomato that they had ground up in the Cuisinart. It was a fresh tomato that was ground and then instantly just put into some garlic and oil, and then put the scallops that had been quickly cooked, because you don't cook them a long time, and then use that. But then she did top it with avocado. But now the ginger, I think you're going to want to have some other things, because the you mean fresh ginger, don't you, that you would use, the fresh ginger?
I'm listening.
Instead of candied ginger.
Oh, well, no, sure.
You correct. Meant the fresh.
Yes.
I think that you're going to want something to extend that ginger, and that's why it often appears in the Oriental taste with soy sauce and vinegar, a little soy sauce and vinegar and some oils, and then the ginger and onion and garlic with that, which is a kind of an Oriental sauce. And but then I don't know that I would want the avocado with that.
It's too blonde.
Yeah.
It'd be a waste
of
the avocado.
I
was trying to think of something avocado that would perk up the avocado. Maybe just shallots.
You know, remember the first caller
mm-hmm.
that said, remember that they'd made these sauces with fruits before?
Mm-hmm.
Now listen, there are some real great black plums right now at 10 cents a piece at Jewel. And I will tell you, they are extraordinarily good. And I'm an awful critic of those. I buy them and they're disappointing and then I go home. Well, these are not disappointing right now.
Really?
And I'll bet you if you took some black plums and sort of made then the ginger has something to play against. And the avocado would go with that beautifully.
Hmm.
Ooh, that. So let's make this up. Some chopped onion and black plums and garlic into the sauce. Oh no, not very little. No, don't put any garlic in it. Let the ginger be enough.
Right.
And then maybe at the end, just a slight drizzle of sesame oil. And I think that would be quite good with the scallops. Are they the great big ones or the little ones?
No, they're the little ones. Well, at least I think they're cut up, actually, because I thought bay scallops were, you know, bigger than a 50-cent piece, at least.
No, that's another one. The ones that they call bay scallops around here are those little tiny bits of things.
Yes.
Yeah, but they're awfully good. I had a bunch
yes.
of those the other night. But the main thing is do them quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you do them, you have the sauce on the side, do them, and then sauce the fettuccine with it. Just put a little
You're
bit.
You're going back to fettuccine.
Beg your pardon?
You're going back to fettuccine.
Oh, yeah. Oh, did you want just the scallops and a sauce?
Oh, well, I wanted them on rice.
Oh, on rice. Okay. Well, whatever you would. Now, okay, if you're going to make the rice.
The rice is sticky, you see, and it'll bind with the oysters. I mean, with the scallops.
With the scallops. All right, if you're going to do that and you're going to make the rice, let's just push it. as Emerald says, let's kick it up a notch. When you cook your rice, cook it with some lemon peels, just the edge.
Good.
Lemon peels and cloves.
Ooh.
About 3 or 4 cloves. It makes a perfumed rice that is absolutely so exotic I can't stand it. Something I learned in 1964 in England at Star of India restaurant. I said, why is this rice so good, you know? And I found lemon peels and cloves, and I cook it that way if I want something a little perfumey. And that would be a nice balance against this plum sauce.
Plum ginger.
Plum and ginger. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That sounds very interesting.
Plum. I'm going to write it down myself. Plum and ginger and some green onions.
Green onions, right.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And then, as I say, just a little finish of perhaps the toasted sesame oil.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
thanks. You call in. We'll design a dish for you, custom
well,
made.
Well, it needs some help. You need to have some parameters, and then we can do it, can't we? I don't think we've ever done that on.
Not that I can recall.
Hey, this is a WILL original recipe, never found before. But you see, it all came together that someone reminded that maybe this is a thought and that's a thought.
And you wouldn't want to have a little acid in there of some kind?
Well, the plums are sweet, onions, ginger, sesame oil.
I don't know. Maybe it's just that I sort of like, you know.
I could handle a little balsamic vinegar with the fruit.
Oh, that might be nice. Yes, yes.
Oh, here's a new bit. Oh, here I go on balsamic vinegar. I'm going to do this. I'm going to try this. For Christmas, I was given an extraordinary gift of balsamic vinegar of undetermined age. What I do know is it was very, very, very costly. It was $250 for a little bottle. That's very costly. But when you poured it out, it was like syrup. Mm. It was just thick like syrup. Now, you don't use that all up on a little green salad, you know. You use that in a different manner. But just this last week on the Food Channel, I think it was Mario Vitelli said, oh, here's a new thing that they're doing. And they take four bottles of good balsamic vinegar and reduce it down to one bottle. And it comes out thick. You see, so you could get some $6 or $7 balsamic vinegar, and you'd only have about $25 invested in this, and you'd have something that would be another kind of. And then sometimes that was just simply strewn over roasted meat, or maybe just around the edge of the plate, because again, it's very, very concentrated. I can hardly wait to get that done. I've got too many other things going right now. I can't get to the store and get my balsamic vinegar. But give it a try. Give it a try, because I'm telling you, that thick syrup was elixir. It was really elixir. It is wonderful, wonderful. You don't use it all at once.
No.
And you don't tell anybody else who's coming into your house where the vinegars are put. That's hidden. This is hidden away. I have another one that the same person gave me about 10 years ago. And on it said, this is to be consumed in 1996. It was about 25 years old then, and then you let it sit 10 years. I'm down to the last quarter of an inch on it. You don't eat up fast either. Balsamic vinegar is a good treat, and it goes really well with fruit. So, yeah.
The Italians, they're fond of putting it on strawberries.
Oh, I'll say, and so am I, and I'm not even Italian. Strawberries is really good, or a vinaigrette using balsamic vinegar and raspberry vinegar and raspberries, and make that up and put it on your salad. Oh, what a treat that is. And it's such a surprise. It's like, ha-ha, guess what this is? I don't know. It's so exotic, I can't believe it. What is it? Balsamic vinegar strudel on the top of strawberries. Awfully good. Takes the place of champagne nowadays.
Well, we all must make compromises, I guess. Recipes, questions, comments are welcome. Doyle Moore is here, the man we like to call our chef in residence, 333-9455. That's the Champaign Urbana number, toll free. So we'll save you the cost of the call if it would be long distance, 800-222-9455. And we've talked about some different things here, but we started out talking about tomatoes and said if you have some good tomato recipes, maybe you might like to share them, as we are coming into that time when there are going to be lots of tomatoes.
Tomato time. That's good. Well, David, what do you do with a tomato?
Well, if I had really, really good one. Mm-hmm. Probably the first thing I would want to do would be just to slice it.
Just to slice it
and eat it.
Now, then is this one that you would pick from your own garden?
Yes,
then you would slice
could,
it and eat it right in the garden, wouldn't
yes.
you?
Yes. Well, I remember. Yep. See, my wife is tired of hearing this story because I guess she thinks that either I should start growing tomatoes again or shut up about it. But you know, yeah, it was for a long time. I guess I was, you know, I ate tomatoes and I ate tomato sauce, but probably wasn't a huge fan of tomatoes until I grew my own. And I still remember, it was like almost like a religious experience. When I had the first one, I went out, I picked it off the vine, I brought it in, I sliced it. It was still warm from being out
still
in the sun.
Still warm and had a smell to it that is yeah. unequaled anywhere, that oil from the tomato vine.
It was red as a ruby inside. Mm. One of the big, it was like a big boy or something
big
like
boy,
that.
Yeah.
One of the big beefsteak tomatoes. And I just put a little bit of Italian salad dressing on there and a little feta cheese and had that. And it was just, I still remember it. So if I could get a tomato like that, I would just slice it and eat it. Probably other than that, I don't know things that I would do that would be too terribly exotic. Now, I do, if I can get good tomatoes and good fresh basil, I would make just a very simple tomato sauce, peel them, seed them, core them, saute a little garlic, put the tomatoes in the pan with some oregano, maybe a little salt and pepper, mm-hmm, and cook them for about 5 or 6 minutes, right, just that, so it, that's, it would
that's
thicken
the,
up.
That's the opposite of cooking all day right. tomato paste. It's very interesting because that fresh tomato taste still exists after about 5 minutes of cooking, and it's totally different from the I don't want to call it ketchup, but that's cooked down over several hours. That's a new thing that I've been watching. As I say, when Mary Sue cooked the tomato sauce, just grind it up and throw it in the pan and heated it up with the garlic, and that was all there was to it. And awfully, awfully interesting and very fast, quite rapid. Very good thought.
And it's really – and the only – the thing about it that's much work is, peeling and chopping the tomatoes. I prefer not to have tomato skins in my sauce, so I like to take the skin off.
Well,
and sort of,
all right. Tell us how you take the skin off the tomato real fast.
I'll just make a little slash in the skin with a sharp knife and put it in boiling water for about 30 seconds. And then if you want to handle them right away, then you can just take them and plunge them into a cold water to get at the point where you can handle them. And I think the thing that you have to – it takes much less time than you think it should. And if you let them sit in there too long, then the tomato under the skin will start to cook.
And then
that will make it harder to handle because they'll be
slippery.
Sort of slippery. Yeah.
Well, that's it. That's the way you do it. You know, you do that to peaches too. Exactly the same thing. Peaches in boiling water, then the skin just slips off of them.
Well, I guess I'd never tried. I guess any time that I peel peaches, I've just done it. You know, I think it's more laborious, but you can do it if it's
that was
just
the regular
peach. That's
just because it's the other thing that I know that you can do with taking peelings off.
Grapes. No.
No, I think you have to peel a grape by individual. I don't know. I'm going to check into that. Maybe you blanch grapes to peel them more easily. I'll have to call Mae West and find out about that.
Do that. I know she's a close personal friend. Downers Grove, we have a caller here. Line number 4 to talk with. Hello.
Hi. I have a salsa question.
Yes.
We're fond of making salsa out of homegrown tomatoes, and we live in zone 3/4, so we don't usually get very many ripe ones. But we really like to minimally process the salsa to get the fresh flavor, but we always seem to have a problem with it being very watery from the juice of the tomatoes. Do you have any ingredient that could kind of thicken it when you process it so that it's not so runny of a product?
Now, by process, what do you mean?
Well,
is this a fresh salsa?
Well, we can it because, like I say, we don't have many. We eat salsa all through the year and go through it an awful lot of it, so we can our salsa, and you have to heat it up to a certain degree to get the.
Well, you see, that's going to release most of the juice from the tomato.
Yeah.
Probably the only thought would be to squeeze the juice out of the tomato and keep it as dry as possible, and then let the processing be the technique. Or what about freezing it? Have you ever frozen your salsas?
No, we haven't tried that.
Everything that's in one is freezable that I can think of. Tomatoes, peppers, garlic, and tomatoes are all freezable. That might slow down. You might give that a try because you can freeze all of that, I know.
Well, we have, chopped up the tomatoes in fairly big chunks and let them drain a little bit and save the juice if we need to use it. But I don't know if there's an ingredient that the commercial salsa uses to be thick like that because they have.
Oh, I see what you mean. Probably there is gum tragacanth.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, which is either gum tragacanth or carrageen moss.
Uh-huh.
Those are food thickeners.
Yeah.
Carrageen moss is called Irish moss also.
Okay.
And I believe you can get powders of that. Of carrageen moss, and that is a food thickener. I use it for making marbled paper myself. It's put in ice cream as well. Carrageen moss is the thickener in ice cream for a lot of situations. You didn't know that, did you, David?
No, I didn't.
And you're not pleased, are you, David?
Well,
it's an additive, but it's meant to thicken up things like that. Those carrageen moss and gum tragacanth, I think, would work.
Okay. Where do you usually find those?
Well, I don't know. First, I would go to Strawberry Fields and ask if they have any of the carrageen moss.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, it's also called Irish moss, and it's used. And it is used. It is a food product, and it's used for making the blancmange that was very famous in Ireland. Pudding, the big blancmange pudding. I think Monty Python used that an awful lot.
There was the blancmange that decided to win Wimbledon and
yes.
turned everyone into Scotsmen because they're the worst tennis players in the world. That's probably what you're thinking.
That was what I was thinking of, yes, that particular situation. I would try there first and take their recommendation as to where else to go.
Okay, great.
That'd be a start. And that might have some directions on how you would use it. I don't know whether you mix it up or whether you cook it first or whether you just add it and let it do its thing. It does collate and become a thickener, though. That might be a help.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Well, could you use something like pectin or something that you would use when you're making
That's
preserves?
That's gel. Well, no, that requires a lot of sugar.
Oh.
Pectin, you need sugar to interact with the pectin. But then you could put a little sugar in that. No, you'd need more sugar in that. No, I don't think so.
Yeah,
those two things go together, the sugar and the pectin. Mm. That's what makes it if you don't put enough sugar in, no matter how much pectin you put
gel.
In, it won't gel. No.
Mm.
No. Not too much. Carrageen moss is the answer.
All right.
Had to think about that a while.
I'll take thickeners for 250, Alex. We have another caller.
Good.
There.
Let's talk to somebody else.
Line number one in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Hello there.
I have another way to peel tomatoes.
Oh, yes.
If you're out in the garden, just scrape the tomato all around, and then you can just lift the peeling off.
That's what happens. It breaks that membrane between the skin and yeah.
Right.
With the back of your knife.
Yes.
And you just kind of bruise it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it comes off very easy. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, if you're in the house, if you hold the tomato over a flame and turn it, that'll do the same thing.
Oh, that's to heat it up and then to start cooking that, isn't it? Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I back to the girls, the charred tomatoes had become to do that. So that would be a nice taste on the tomato anyway, to put it over the flame and get that char on the skin. Even though you're going to take it off, it does something else to it.
Well, you don't have to go until it's charred if you want to remove it. Just turn it until you hear it pop in one place.
And then
you can just pull it all off.
And that kind of heats it up. Yeah, that's
yeah.
the way the boiling water would do. Well,
yes.
Thank you. I'd forget. There was in the back of my mind that bit about scraping it with a knife, but I haven't done that for so long. I just totally forgot about it. I believe that's the way my mother peeled the tomatoes, was the knife backwards and then just kind of rub it with the knife and as though you're peeling it but not peeling it, and then the peeling just comes right off.
Enjoy your program.
Thank you very much. We have a good time here, too.
Hi. Well, I'm going to try that now.
Because I do know my mother never did boiling water and all that business. That would have been too much fuss. And
yeah.
I do know that she peeled tomatoes. That's exactly what she did. The back of the knife.
Well, that would eliminate a couple steps if
yes,
that indeed would work.
And it's rapid. And as she said, now, I have one tomato piece of information that I can give real fast.
Sure, we have a couple minutes.
Because this is a matter of after you've had so many tomatoes, you don't know what to do with them. I say freeze them. But to freeze them, all I do is take the core out and then just put them in the freezer and freeze them whole and solid. And then when you want to use them, you just kind of whittle them over the saucepan or whatever. Well, I learned this from one of the cooking teachers, and I thought that was such a cool thing to do. You know, she'd need a tomato for making a particular masala or gravy of some sort, and we would just sort of sit there and whittle this potato in there, and it would be all done. And it was perfect. The reason you take the core out is because the tomato will explode if you don't do something to it. It'll explode in the freezer.
Oh, uh-huh.
So you cut this hole in the top, set it in there, and then you can, after you just let it set and freeze, you could put it on a pan or whatever. Then you can pop it into a sack and put it away or more permanently. bunch of them together. It works, and they since you're going to cook it, because you can't have a fresh sliced tomato frozen. Sorry about that, but you can use it to cook and make sauces with it.
I think probably – have we not talked in the past, or maybe I'm just making this up, that occasionally you've done your own dried tomatoes?
Yes, and we had a listener who sent in some information about that. And this was interesting. On Ready, Set, Cook, the Ethiopian cook said he had never run into dried tomatoes until he came to America. And I thought, wait a minute. He said in Europe – oh, he said sun-dried tomatoes.
Oh,
he said,
wow.
He said in Europe they're always done overnight in the oven. But I thought that sun-dried tomatoes were Italian, and I had seen some television programs where they were this industry in Italy of doing sun-dried tomatoes. So I don't know. Maybe it's another one of those mixed metaphors. But apparently America's gone crazy over sun-dried tomatoes, which – and well, they should. I use a dehydrator. Myself, a little round dehydrator, and they work quite well. And you want to be very careful about. I did an awful thing. I would stuff garlic into the jar before I'd fill it up with oil, and they all exploded. It was not good. That's one of the reasons why garlic remember garlic came out and then all of a sudden it came off the market, the chopped garlic?
Oh, you can buy it in a little jar?
Right.
Yeah.
Because they had not learned about botulism and acid. And if you put a little bit of acid, I don't know what it is that they're using, but it must have acid to not do – then it came back on the market. And so if you look at the contents, it is garlic and acid. One of the acids that keeps the botulism from growing. But boy, I sure made a mess. So don't put fresh garlic in your dried tomatoes when you put them in oil and seal them up and wait for them to work.
Well, we got to go.
I'm sorry.
But we'll be back.
Well, try to remember September? That day in September.
All right.
I think it's what, 8, 9, 10, about the 10th. I think it's, the first Wednesday.
First Wednesday. Doyle Moore will be back. We'll have a good time again. We'll talk some more about cooking.